good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And if you've heard this show before, you know that this is one of my favorite times of the week to be here, share things with you. You share things with me. And I've brought along one of my favorite people.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Yes. One of my favorite people, Richard. And if you get our emails, you know that we have a very interesting individual tonight that's coming to work with us, and her name is Cleopatra. Richard, in case there are some people listening to us that are not on our email list, tell them how they can get on our email list.
Yes, if you just go to the website, the2012countdown.com, and enter your name and email address, and you will get an email which will have a link in it for you to click on and confirm your registration, and it will be all done. And whilst we're on that subject, I will mention that we've had a few little problems with our provider for that service, and a number of people who had recently ordered things from us, particularly the recent Yeshua call, managed to get themselves deleted from the list courtesy of a bug in that system, which we've now got on top of. But if you have been on our list and have fallen off, you seem to be not getting emails, for example, a notification of this radio show call earlier today, then I ask that you send me an email to richard@richardpresser.com, and I will look into it and reactivate things or work through it with you. In fact, the simple solution to it is to use the email address, if you're sure about what it is that's registered with us, to again go back to that website and simply re-register, and it will reactivate your presence on our list. Enough of that stuff.
So, folks, if you've been on our listening to our shows before, you know that you can tune in and receive some of the energies that Richard receives. So, just call Cleopatra, put some energy in your heart center and in the third eye, and perhaps you will be able to feel some of the things that Richard's going to be talking about. So, Richard, is she there?
I believe she is. And so, she has an interesting energy. It is, in some ways, a powerful energy, and yet not. It's a bizarre thing to say, I know, but that's kind of how I experience it. There is this sense of power in the energy, and yet it's not powerful in the way that the energy of some people we work with almost overpowers me. It's not like that. And perhaps it's a reflection of the power that she carried in the world, you might say, rather than the totality of the power she carries as a soul. The energy has a significant love component, though it's not really central. It's more, I experience a little left of center, and it's not what I'd call a pristine energy. A little confused, perhaps, would be how I'd describe it. I mean, she certainly doesn't come to me in the way that a spiritual master would come to me. But nevertheless, there's power and there's a complexity to her energy. I'm perhaps not explaining this terribly well, but I'm just trying to express it as it comes to me. So I sense the power that she had an intelligence more than wisdom would be my sense. And there is, as I said, a level of love which is certainly present. Very unusual energy. Very interesting.
Thank you, Richard. And does she have a message for us today?
I hope so. Let's see.
I hope so too.
My dear friends, it is an honor to come forth in this manner, and certainly not something that I was expecting, though I have been aware of the work that these two do, and whilst I was not exactly looking for this connection, I was certainly aware of the interests and the paths walked by Carolyn in this lifetime and her interests, and also the past lives that she is connected to, some of which bridge back to Egypt. And so it was no great surprise to me that she, you might say, tapped me on the shoulder and asked if I was willing to come forth. And this I was willing to do. Some of you will know that, you might say, Carolyn was Julius Caesar's daughter, Julia, in a past life. And as you may know, I had a relationship with Caesar, and so there is that connection of sorts between Carolyn and myself. And so I mention this because there is this, you might consider on a level, relationship between us that led in part to her connecting with me and calling me forth. Some of you perhaps know of my history. There have been many, you might consider, plays and movies and so on done about my life, which have endeavoured to convey a story of sorts, not necessarily an accurate story of my life. And perhaps the two most striking elements that are recorded are my relationship with Julius Caesar, which was certainly driven by me, as history records, and also my chosen death at the hands of a snake bite. That is also accurate because I had control, you might consider, of the process of my death, and it avoided any suffering that I might experience at the hands of others. As you may know, I had been previously imprisoned, and whilst overall I was treated relatively well, I can say that I understood the possibility of not being treated so relatively well, particularly since I could see that my death was very likely in those circumstances. And so I, you might say, claimed my own power to end my own life, and I have no regrets about that in the circumstances. I do wish to take a moment to talk a little about my life, because I certainly was very forthright in the way that I lived, and I'm not advocating necessarily that you live according to the principles by which I lived, since your circumstances to a great degree are very different from my own. However, I certainly took the opportunities that presented themselves to me to, you might consider, grab and hold power in circumstances where the holding of that power was somewhat tenuous. As you may understand history, I lived in a time where the control in the world, you might consider, was transitioning from the Greek control to the Roman control, especially in the Egyptian area of the world. And so, as you may know, I was of Greek origin, coming from, you might consider, Ptolemaic stock. Ptolemy having been one of the original generals under Alexander, and his offspring, you might consider, had been the so-called pharaohs of Egypt during that Greek influence, period of Greek influence in Egypt. And you might consider my lifetime marked for all intents and purposes, the end of that period and the transition into complete control of Egypt by Rome. You might understand that this was occurring not that long before the emergence of that one that you know of as Yeshua or Jesus in an area of the world not too far away from where I was living. And there were indeed connections between not so much me, perhaps, but certainly Julius Caesar and Julia and Augustus, who followed in the steps of Caesar as the leader of the Roman world. But that is not the point of my conversation, other than to mention that piece of timing. I was, you might consider, relatively ruthless in grabbing what power was available to me, and I used all of my not inconsiderable skills, but also my wiles as a woman to get where I could go, you might consider. But I was also not neglectful of those for whom I was responsible. If you examine history, you will find that the so-called Greek pharaohs who preceded me had not bothered to master the language of the area, whereas I indeed did do this amongst other languages, because I understood the importance of connecting with the people I was representing. And so, in a sense, even though I was not of their stock, I was, you might consider, valued at the very least, if not loved by some of those who I ruled over in my life. And so, as I said, I was quite ruthless in using the tools and the wiles that were available to me to achieve the power that I held for a useful amount of my life. So I wanted to mention those few threads to confirm the story about me connecting with Julius Caesar and fathering a son by him before making a choice to connect with Mark Antony, who was opposed to Augustus, as history will show. And I can tell you that was a significant error in my plan, but nevertheless, that is how life unfolds. You make your choices and you live with them. And I always lived with the choices that I made in my life. I viewed some of them as having been choices in error, but I never regretted any choice that I made in my life. I lived it to the full, and I encourage all of you to live your lives to the full in the circumstances in which you find yourselves, and not to regret anything that you do. I'm not saying that you should not review the choices you make and perhaps as you go forward make different choices that are better choices than you may have made in the past. That is all part of growing and evolving in a given lifetime. But regret is not a useful response, because you are where you are based on the circumstances in which you have been born and the circumstances that you have then created upon that platform, along with the time in which you find yourself. All of these things are factors that bear upon the path that you walk and that you choose. So you are unlikely to walk the path that I walked, for example, because the times and the opportunities are very different for you than they were for me. But I will say that making the best of what you see in front of you based upon what you consider to be important in your life is absolutely critical. Keep stepping and do not step forward in regret of what you have done in the past. It is not a useful response. It disempowers you and it does not really contribute to you continuing to step forward in an empowered way in your life. So if I can share something with you from my own experiences, it would be that. And so I wanted to not only share a little of, you might consider, some perspectives of my own life with you, but to mention to you, as so many have done before me coming forth on this radio show, to mention the extraordinary time in which you all find yourselves, because it truly is an extraordinary time. And as you may know, there were stories told, you might consider, that pointed to the importance of astrology in my time, the importance of that cycle that you know of as the precession of the equinoxes, and in particular the time in which you find yourselves, the moment when your solar system is in alignment with galactic center on its path along the plane of the ecliptic, which is where indeed you are at this moment. And it is a special moment in time, a time that was, in a sense, understood in my time. Now, I mentioned that my lifetime was relatively close. It preceded by just a small margin the time when Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were present in that Hebrew land. And as you may know, it is relatively close to where I was living in Alexandria. And indeed, the young Yeshua spent time not too far from my part of the world. But I have come to understand the importance of that lifetime as it was lived and its connection with this time. The fact that the life of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene indeed was about preparing for the time in which you find yourselves, rather than the stories you might consider that are told by Christianity about who and what this individual is or was. And it is a special time. And I mentioned the connection and the awareness in my time because it can help to give you a sense of the important moment in which you find yourselves, because it is an important moment. And if you examine the information which exists about the tracking of, you might consider, the precession of the equinoxes in ancient myth and legend and in many traditions, you will find that this knowledge was handed down through the ages, through the oral traditions which preceded writing as you know it. These traditions told the story of the precession of the equinoxes and the impact that it has upon humanity. These stories have been very carefully hidden, but indeed there have been periods of quite dramatic change historically, with, for example, comets coming to the planet and, you might consider, virtually transforming life overnight, as occurred pretty much in the moment when humanity or the planet was in alignment with galactic center some 13,000 years ago. So this pattern is very important in terms of its impact upon human life. Not only the constellations which are in view, but this moment of alignment with galactic center where you find yourselves. And so it is a special time that you are in, this time when those who seek to control all of humanity and indeed potentially eliminate in large measure the human population for their own purposes, so that they can control a relatively small group of people that they keep to do the menial tasks. You might consider the Hunger Games movies as being a very powerful reflection of their plans. But I will say to you that those plans will not come to fruition. It has been said that these dark ones will be in a place where they believe they are about to grab complete control of humanity and are moving forward to achieve that, only to have that snatched from them. And that, my friends, is where you find yourselves at this time. They truly believe they have all in plan and are about to, you might say, spring the trap. But those who wish to follow a spiritual path, those who feel that inner calling, you might consider, will step out of their trap into this new consciousness. And this will unfold in the very near future, my friends, a very present experience it will be for so many of you, especially those who are listening to this message of mine. And so I feel honored to be yet another who connects with you in this manner and reinforces this picture, but also take the opportunity to share a little of my history, you might consider, the sense of what was important in my life, and in its own way, its connections with the time in which you find yourselves. And so it is.
Thank you so much for the information that you brought forth, and Richard for bringing it forth. Can you give us some idea of what you see as near-term changes that might be occurring on Earth because we are in galactic center or near galactic center?
This time has been marked by many traditions. Perhaps the most powerful markers are those left by the Maya. Of course, most people are aware of the ending of their long count calendar at the end of 2012, at the December solstice. Rather fewer people are aware of their detailed carvings, you might consider, the ceremonial ball games that they defined, where the ball that was passing through the ring in the ball game, in this ceremonial structure that they set up to look like a ball game, the ball passing through the ring was your sun, you might consider, passing through the hoop of the Milky Way. So they were not only showing the marker with the long count calendar, but also in many of the structures that they left and have passed the test of time. And the work by John Major Jenkins is a very good place to start if you wish to understand the story that they left pointing to this time. I know I am talking around the subject, but I wanted to point to the markers that have been left, at least one of them that is very readily available for any of humanity to trace. So, as I said, history has marked this time. And as I perceive things, what is planned is that a new consciousness has come and connected to, you might consider, the existing consciousness on Earth. And there will be a bridging across from the existing consciousness to the new consciousness. And you might consider the stepping stone from one to the other is the unfolding of the rejuvenation of the physical form, a reclaiming of its form as it existed in what you call that time of Atlantis. And indeed, Atlantis did exist, and the physical form was very different then from what it is now. And as you may already understand, the physical body did not age the way it does today. And so you might consider the first step in reclaiming that past greatness and moving beyond it is to reclaim that physical form. Now, this might sound very extreme to many of you, but really the cells of your body know how to do this. In a sense, they have never forgotten the old form that existed. And the other thing to remember that is that all that you experience is essentially holographic in nature. Everything that seems to be solid really is not solid in the manner that you think. and is more readily transformable than most of humanity would recognize. And so it is not as difficult, as I say, as you might think to undertake this work. Of course, there are processes and procedures that need to be in place for this to flow, because we are dealing with a living human being going through this transformation, and there is a need for it to occur in a manner which does not trigger the termination of the physical form. So whilst in a sense the cells know how to do this, there is a certain process that needs to be followed, and that process is in a sense being put in place, you might consider, as we speak. And so this process will begin in the near term and will gradually spread out through the incarnated cherubim initially, and then out to all of humanity that choose to participate in this transition as they become aware that this transition is occurring. And as has been described elsewhere, there will be, in a sense, two expressions of consciousness, two experiences of life, one beside the other in this consciousness. And those who have not made the transition will be able to see those that have gone through this process, and they will be able to communicate with them, but they will not be able to interfere with them. It might sound a little strange to you, but this was very necessary, you might consider, for those who have not made the choice to be able to witness the choice, but also those who wished to stop it being unable to. It is an interesting scenario that is about to emerge. So this is what I see happening. And again, as others have done, I refer you to the recording of the most recent call with Michael Jackson that was done on this program some months ago, where he explains this in quite some detail. And I do not wish to go into all of that detail again. I will only be repeating what was said in that call.
That's really exciting information, and I thank you for this. Can you give us any sense of when this transition will begin? How do you see that?
Yes, you might want to invite people to call in, Carolyn, too. That might be useful.
Okay. How about you doing that? Because I can't see who's on the line.
Sure. Well, we don't have anybody on the line. I'm just saying, if anybody wishes to call in with questions, please feel free to do so, and we will fit them in when we can. And so what was your question, Carolyn? I distracted myself. When was your question? When will it happen?
Yes. How does she foresee or feel about when these changes will begin?
I cannot say exactly, because we are talking about the future. And as you may understand, the future is made of possibility and probability. And also interwoven with possibility and probability are events of certainty. This is an event of certainty. It will happen. But the timing is a little unclear. Certainly from the way I assess it, it is indeed very close to emerging in your experience. I know others have suggested this could emerge in the next 30 to 90 days, and I would concur with those estimates. Perhaps even sooner.
I thought it was very interesting about what you brought up about the ball court in your conversation. And the rings, how it represented the earth.
The sun, actually, I think, is what it represented. Yes.
Well, I just thought it was so fascinating.
Yes. Yes, the Maya had what you might consider these ceremonial ball courts, and they had individuals that, in a sense, they considered gods looking down on this, and they represented particular characters, but really reflected particular times in the unfolding of these events. And John Major Jenkins explains this in quite a lot of detail in his books on this subject. It's very interesting.
So he wrote several books on this subject?
He did, yes.
Sounds like something we need to look at, doesn't it?
Well, I've read them.
Of course you did. Did you have any questions, Richard?
Well, we have a caller. We have Lou on line two. Lou?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Richard. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, dear.
And hi, Cleopatra. And I have a question about their level of awareness of our galactic families, our star families, and how do they, what was their level of awareness, and was there travel and of that nature?
You mean what awareness did she have of things beyond this dimension? Is that what you mean?
When
she was incarnate?
Yes, there was planets, other planets, and star families. Whether there was any communication with off planet entities.
Mm. It is fair to say that there was a period of true greatness in a spiritual sense within Egypt, and this was a long time before my time on the planet. We are talking more in the time of Isis and others, which represents that time which is known as Septepi, or first time, which really followed very soon after the fall in Atlantis. It was, in a sense, known as the time of the gods. And in a sense it was, because these great beings came forth to, you might consider, reestablish as much as they could the advanced knowledge and understanding that had existed prior to the fall. And so it was really in that time when those beings certainly had the ability to communicate quite strongly beyond this dimension. But in my time, those skills had been very much forgotten and lost. And you might consider those times of greatness were past.
Well, that was a wonderful question and a wonderful answer. Thank you both.
It was.
Yes.
And we have a call from Vicky on line three. Vicky?
Hello. I love your show. Thank you very much for doing it. I greatly admire Cleopatra, and I've read a lot about her, and I believe, I want to say you, were a very smart and caring leader for your people. I was wondering, if you have reincarnated as other powerful people we may have known, either before or after your time as Cleopatra.
So to be clear, Vicky, the question is, did Cleopatra's monad send forth other fingers of consciousness to incarnate before or after her time? Is that your question?
Yes, like powerful people we may know.
Okay. Like all monads that have been involved in the Earth sphere, my monad has sent forth many fingers of consciousness, quite a number which preceded my time as Cleopatra, and quite a number that have followed. But I have been the only finger of consciousness that has, you might consider, left its mark in history in the manner that I did. None of the others are recorded in your history books as I have been. And there were many elements that led to this. Part of it has been the fascination that history has held for Egypt and those who've held power there. But also, you might consider, I led something of a colorful life. So this has been a factor. There have been other fingers of consciousness that have played leadership roles of a sort, but there are none that feature in your history.
Thank you.
Richard, while we're on this subject, I would like to mention that people who are interested in the fingers of consciousness that their soul sent forth can get some of this information in a soul reading.
They can. They can. There is the key past life session that you do, which is just about a one-hour session where the individual's soul takes them, working with Carolyn, to a past life, to connect with that past life because it has relevance to the individual in this life. They're quite fascinating sessions. And then, as you say, there are the soul origin and history readings that you do, which are far more comprehensive, amazing readings, and involve quite a lot of work to put together. But they really are quite fascinating. They share some of the history and the focus of the monad and a bunch of the past lives that an individual has, you might consider, or is connected to.
And where would people go to get more information about this, Richard?
I'll put a link in the email after the show, but the soul origin and history readings, and you can see examples of them on the site. It's called souloriginandhistory.com.
Well, that's original.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, we get into areas that are really interesting. The work that different monads are involved with and how individual fingers of consciousness carry on that work.
Yes. And so we have Julie from Washington State online too. Julie?
Well, hello, Carolyn and Richard. So nice to be live on one of these calls. And I'm a huge fan of Cleopatra's and have studied her and found her to be fascinating, and read the book by Margaret George about her, and was very happy to see that it kind of disagreed, or there was a lot more depth to her than what, you know, the movies and the media portrayed, and it seems to be agreeing with what she said, which is exciting. My question for her is, was she aware of the underground cities, I guess it would be, or the tunnels underground, Alexandria in Egypt, where Yeshua's grandmother lived for centuries, and studied and just lived her life in preparation for what she helped Yeshua do in his training? And was she aware of all those the different temples and what they were used for in that spiritual training that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene ultimately did?
The primary tunnels to which you refer, where Anna spent most of her time, were actually more in the area of Cairo than the area of Alexandria. But there were indeed, as you say, tunnels in the area of Alexandria, and some of the what you might consider Essene and related community did in fact live underground in some of those areas. But this was not something that I was aware of in my time. If you, as I said earlier, if you wind the clock back far enough in Egyptian history, then the great leaders of Rome, of Egypt, were very deeply spiritual in nature, such as Isis and Horus and so on. And indeed, there are powerful connections between Isis and Horus and Isis and Osiris and Horus. There is a very similar pattern you might consider in Mother Mary, Joseph, Ben Jacob, and Yeshua. They are all indeed from the same monads. And so you might consider it was a repeat play. But in my time, really, those in the authority roles that I had were not the kind of spiritual individuals that existed in the past. As I indicated earlier, this spiritual understanding had in large measure been lost. There was still that thread within Egyptian tradition that the Pharaoh was on a level a god and would ascend literally into the stars. But there was not that spiritual connection or understanding. I personally was not connected to such things and did not have the awareness of those extraordinary communities that lived underground, nor indeed the spiritual traditions and the training disciplines that were still active in my time, though somewhat degraded, down the Nile. So all of that was in large measure hidden from me, in part because, as you understand it, my familial traditions were Greek, and really my family had not spoken the local language. It was me that began to connect with this, and my focus primarily was about surviving in my role and doing the best job I could do in the circumstances to, you might consider, lead the people. So all of that meant that my focus upon spiritual traditions, and really when one talks about those underground communities, they were not known to most people who did not have those deeper connections such as Anna had. So those were unknown to me during my life.
Thank you very
much. Richard, I would like to ask Cleopatra where her palace was, if she could give us a few words about that and describe it.
So thank you, Julie, for your question. Appreciate it. I lived in the area of Alexandria, as you may know. It was the capital of Greece at that, of Egypt at that time. And as you may know from its name, it was essentially established by Alexander the Great. And so it carried very strong Greek traditions. And so my palace, you might consider, was in the area of Alexandria. And it was not built specifically for me, but rather had been the royal residence for several generations, you might consider. It was not specially built for me. Of course, it was very well appointed, and I wanted for nothing in my life from a material perspective. But my life quality, you might consider, was somewhat diminished because of the struggles for power that were very much part of my time. It was not what you might consider a stable time to be fulfilling the role that I did. And as you may know, you might consider, fell in and out of power as events unfolded. So whilst I lived with great appointment, it was not what you might consider a comfortable existence in the sense of those disruptions and ongoing threats to, you might consider, disempowerment.
Thank you both. I appreciate that. Do we have any other people asking questions, Richard?
Not at the moment, Carolyn, no.
Well, I will ask this question. Since there's no one else asking questions, when people pass over to the other side, do they reconnect with those who were important in their lifetime while they were on Earth? For instance, have you had connections or worked with Julius Caesar or Mark Antony?
It is an interesting question that you ask. And of course, experience of life, as you call it, is very different on this side from what it is where you are present, because in large measure an individual tends to be where their physical form is expressed, and very few understand how to teleport or bilocate. Teleport meaning move your physical body from one location to another, and bilocate meaning effectively being in more places than one at the same time. And so there is this, you might consider, tendency to be fixed in one physical location in human experience, though it doesn't have to be so. Whereas on this side, there is not that same kind of limitation. There tends to be, you might consider, an area of focus, but in a sense, just as you can learn in your current incarnation to connect with any beings, any expression of consciousness anywhere, either on the planet or anywhere in creation. So it is even more so once you leave that domain. And so there is in general a tendency for individuals to reconnect with those with whom they were close in their lifetimes, but it is a choice. It is a choice on both sides to pursue such connections, and some do and some do not. If there was a close relationship on Earth, it is likely that there will be some level of ongoing contact and relationship beyond the Earth experience, and some of it can be casual, some of it much more than casual. And in my case, I have been in touch with both Caesar and Mark Anthony since I crossed, though it is not a close contact in either case. You may appreciate it. Caesar is more predisposed to connect with his wife of that lifetime, who he regretted, as you know, treating as badly as he did. But they have rediscovered a great deal of, you might say, camaraderie on this side. But of course, as I was expressing, there is not that same singular focus. And as you might understand, as I am communicating with Richard, I am doing many other things, and indeed can be connecting with others who choose to contact me at the same time, something which is not so easy to do in your dimension. And there are advantages and disadvantages to this. The human ability to focus on a particular task, to, you might consider, think things through in an analytical way, to problem solve and so on, is far, far more powerful in that consciousness than it is in this, whereas we have much more freedom to deal with many things concurrently, you might consider, including communication. So I trust this is a helpful contribution.
Yes, it is. And Richard, we have come to the end of our radio show. You know, an hour goes by so quickly.
It does.
And I'd like to thank Cleopatra, and I'd like to thank you, Richard, for bringing her forth.
That's okay. We have a question. I think, is there a Lynn on line two we might just quickly deal with?
Yes. Hello, Carolyn. Hello, Richard. I have a question, and I would like to know the true usage of the Ankh, and is there also a way to use essential oils that we aren't using today that we can, that they used back then?
Wonderful question. I don't know if we got time to answer that, Richard.
Yes, we do. Let's deal with the essential oils bit, because the Ankh gets very deep. Let's see what she has to say about essential oils. The nature of essential oils really is no different in your time than in ours. However, we valued them much more highly in our time than you tend to in yours. They're in a, you might consider, overwhelming of traditional medicines and traditional tools, such as essential oils, by the pharmaceutical industry in your time, a diminishing of the wondrous tools of nature that were available in my time and really still are in your time. They have just been diminished, and so they were much more prized, and they were far better understood. Their powers were better understood by most people than they are in your time. And so their effectiveness was perhaps a little greater in our time because there was that broader acceptance. You might not understand how this works, but if there is a broad acceptance of the power of an essential oil by the community, then it indeed is more likely to express that power than if that value has been demeaned in the general consciousness as it is today in yours. And so I would argue both we appreciated them more and they were able to express themselves more fully in my time than they do in yours.
Richard, we're at the end of our show. I'd like to thank Cleopatra for all of her information. It was really wonderful. And you also for bringing her forth.
Thank you, Carolyn. It was interesting.
We have time to mention this. For people who would like to speak to other consciousness like you are speaking to Cleopatra, you actually teach that ability. Do you have a website that you could tell people where they could go and find out more
information? Yes, we call that process right magic, and we have a website called rightbrainmagic.com.
Yeah, I think it would be great if you looked it up, and Richard is the one that teaches that, and as you can imagine, he's great with that work.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's fun. It's fun work to do.
Indeed it is. And so I would like to thank again you and Cleopatra and all of our listeners. Until the next time.
Indeed. Until next time, my friends. Good night for now.